The first embossed printing for people who are blind. Valentin Ayuy was a student of Rousseau, an advocate of education, social reform, and human dignity. In 1784, he founded a school for blind children in Paris. One of Ayuy's students pointed out that he was able to identify the raised letters on an engraved invitation. This gave Ayuy the idea that perhaps he could produce a printed page that blind people could read. The first mass-produced text, designed specifically for blind people, Essai sur l'éducation des aveugles, was typeset and printed in 1786 by the students at Ayuy's school. The first embossed book in America was produced in 1833. Jacob Snyder, Jr. of the Pennsylvania Institution for the Instruction of the Blind in Philadelphia embossed the Gospel according to St. Mark in a handwritten style he developed. Julius Friedlander, principal of the Pennsylvania Institution, and Napoleon B. Kneese, Jr., who learned printing at the institution, also developed raised type systems based on Roman letters. Boston Line Letter, Boston Line Type, or simply Line Letter. Dr. Samuel Gridley Howell, the first director of the New England Asylum for the Blind, now Perkins, developed his own system of raised type in angular Roman letters called Boston Line Type. In 1835, Howell printed Acts of the Apostles, the first book produced in Boston Line Type. For more than 50 years, Boston Line was the predominant embossed type for blind people in the United States and the choice of most of the schools. APH embossed its first books in Boston Line Letter. Books in Line Letter continued to be popular through the 1880s. Boston Line Type and other systems based on the Roman alphabet could only be produced by means of a printing press. There was no way that blind people could write in Boston Line. Other embossed writing systems. The sighted have been talking to the fingers in the language of the eyes. Pierre Villet. In Europe, a number of writing systems were created that were not based on the Roman alphabet. Inspiration for these systems came from music, ancient writing, like hieroglyphics, codes and ciphers used in diplomacy, and primarily from stenography. Shorthand was introduced in the 18th century. In 1838, Thomas M. Lucas, a teacher of blind children in England, introduced a stenographic system composed of three forms, a straight line, a curve, and a dot. He envisioned his system as a universal reading medium for blind people. Another Englishman to take up the quest for a practical reading method for blind people was Dr. William Moon, a blind man who sought to develop a method of finger reading that was open and clear to the touch. In 1847, Dr. Moon introduced his new type, which was based on the Roman alphabet, with the letters reduced to their simplest forms. The entire Moon alphabet is made up of 9 simple characters turned at various angles. Moon type was read from left to right on one line and from right to left on the next. Moon's success was reflected in the fact that, when he died in 1894, his system was in use in 419 languages and dialects. Moon is the only other system, besides Braille, that is in use today. The Braille Code. Louis Braille was born January 4, 1809, near Paris. When he was 4, he injured his eye while playing in his father's harness shop. Later, he attended the Institution Nationale des Jeunes Aveugles in Paris. It was there that Braille saw a demonstration of a dot code called night writing, presented by Charles Barbier. Young Louis was inspired and began working on his own code of tactile dots. Louis Braille was 20 when he introduced his system in 1829. A refinement of Barbier's raised dot code, the cells were reduced to 6 dots, a size that can be covered by the fingertip. The Braille code in use today is essentially the same as Braille's final version published in 1837. Universal in application, Braille's symbols could represent anything that followed an accepted sequence. An organist, Louis Braille worked out his code for music notation even before his final alphabetic code. Later, Braille codes would be created for mathematics, chemical tables, and all languages. Braille taught his method, unofficially, to the blind students at the Paris school, but it was not until 1854 that his system was officially adopted. Louis Braille died in 1852. At the age of 43. The Braille code was introduced at the Missouri School for the Blind about 1854. According to legend, The students were delighted with the new system because they could write notes and love letters which their sighted teachers couldn't read. The Missouri school was first in the United States to officially adopt Braille. The Battle of the Dots. In 1868, William Bell Waite, superintendent of the New York Institution for the Blind, introduced his own raised dot system, New York Point. And by 1870, New York Point had replaced line letter in most American schools for the blind. The New York Point cell was two dots high, and it varied in length. In order to save space, frequently used letters and contractions were given the least number of dots. For years, there had been a feud between the advocates of American Braille and New York Point. Because the American Printing House for the Blind printed in New York Point and provided these books to schools through federal appropriation, schools using Braille were at a disadvantage. In 1913, the Uniform Type Committee recommended discarding both American Braille and New York Point in favor of a new system called Standard Dot, another revised Braille system. American and British authorities began negotiations to adopt a standard Braille system for the English-speaking world, but the two countries could not agree. The Americans then decided to adopt a uniform code for the U.S., yet another revision, revised Braille 1.5. This was a compromise between Grade 1 Braille, which used no abbreviations and contractions, and Grade 2, which used many. This version was the American standard between 1917 and 1932. Many American blind people had learned to read line type, then New York Point, then American Braille, then revised Braille 1.5. It's no wonder that at a 1918 meeting, Perkins director Michael Anagnos exclaimed, "If anyone invents a new system of printing for the blind, shoot him on the spot." It was not until 1932 that the British and Americans agreed and selected Standard English Braille Grade 2 as the Uniform Braille Code. This was revised British Braille with a few modifications. APH, the early years. In 1854, a blind Kentuckian, Morrison Heady, collected donations for the printing of Milton's Paradise Lost in raised letters. Dempsey B. Sherrod, a blind man from Mississippi, knew about Heady's work, and in 1856 began to canvass his home state to raise funds for printing books in raised letters and for the establishment of a national publishing house to produce them. In 1857, Sherrod convinced the state of Mississippi to issue a charter of incorporation to aid in establishing a publishing house to print books in raised letters for the benefit of the blind. This publishing house was to be located in Louisville, Kentucky. In 1858, the General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Kentucky passed an act to establish the American Printing House for the Blind. 2 years later, in 1860, the American Printing House for the Blind received its first operating funds. Superintendent Bryce M. Patton ordered a press from Mr. Ruggles, who had made the press for the Perkins Institution in Boston, and plans were made to set up the printing house in the basement rooms in the Kentucky Institution for the Education of the Blind. Before the fledgling institution could begin its work of embossing books, the Civil War broke out, wiping out any possibility of the southern states making good on their promises of funding. The first book printed by the American Printing House for the Blind was Fables and Tales for Children, embossed in 1866. The single most important event in the history of the American Printing House for the Blind was the passage of an Act to Promote the Education of the Blind. The act was passed by both houses of Congress and became a law on March 3, 1879. It provided an annual subsidy to be paid to the American Printing House for the Blind. Federal funding created new demands for embossed books, and the printing house soon outgrew its basement room at the Kentucky School. In 1882, the trustees purchased a 6.8-acre tract adjacent to the Kentucky Institution for the Education of the Blind. The building committee set a limit of $10,000 on the cost of the building and selected architect Charles J. Clark to design it. The new building was formally dedicated on June 12, 1883. At the close of the dedication program, the whole audience then repaired to the press room, where Judge Bullock formally started the engines, the revolutions of which meant so much happiness to humanity. Newspaper article, June 11, 1883. In the remaining years of the 19th century, the APH production of embossed books increased dramatically, growing from a 15-page publications catalog in 1894 to a 100-page listing 10 years later. Superintendent B.B. Huntoon summed up early years in the work of the printing house. The American Printing House for the Blind has printed in 5 different kinds of type, manufactures 3 varieties of writing guides, is committed to no special system, and will try any experiment that promises to result well for the blind. It is upon this basis alone, which its works have proved, that it has asked and obtained the confidence of all engaged in the work of educating the blind. B.B. Huntoon, APH, 11th Annual Report. The Clifton Community. As Louisville development moved eastward along the Frankfort Turnpike and rail line in the years following the Civil War, Clifton became a center of industrial, residential, and commercial development. Primarily a working-class neighborhood, Clifton development peaked in the 1880s. The community took its name from Clifton, the country estate of Joshua Bowles, which once dominated the community. 200 goats grazed the hillside near Payne and Spring, the site of Wayland's goat farm, and when the area was subdivided, it was named Angora Heights. Clifton residents were not impressed and promptly renamed the area Billy Goat Hill. The American Printing House for the Blind, Kentucky School for the Blind, and Kentucky Industries for the Blind are important Clifton institutions. Their influence is evident from the audible street crossing signals for the many blind pedestrians to the employment opportunities they provide. Clifton has retained its 19th century character and its sense of community. The active Clifton Community Council is responsible for the current revival, which is evident in the new shops and restaurants, as well as renovated and restored homes. Kentucky Institution for the Education of the Blind, the Early Years. Bryce Patton, the founder of the Kentucky School, came to Louisville in 1839. 3 members of his family were blind, and his brother, Otis, was a student at the Perkins Institution. Bryce Patton was very interested in educating blind children and began classes for a small group in 1839. Otis Patton came to help his brother teach the blind children, and in early 1841 he gave an exhibition of the children's skills before the Kentucky General Assembly. The exhibition failed to convince the legislature to fund a school, and Dr. Howe from Perkins Institution offered to help his former student. Howe's student exhibition for the Kentucky lawmakers was successful, and on February 5, 1842, the Kentucky Institution for the Blind was chartered. By 1845, the school had 24 pupils and had moved into its first permanent home on Broadway. When the first building was destroyed by fire, the board purchased 10 acres on the eastern limit of the city. The new school, a beautiful domed classical revival building, was completed in 1855. Bryce Patton resigned as superintendent in 1871 and was succeeded by Benjamin B. Huntoon, who continued and improved upon Patton's projects. Huntoon was one of the country's leading educators for the blind and a prominent member of the Louisville community. In 1884, Judge William Bullock, who took the lead in establishing the Kentucky School, offered a resolution in the legislature to provide for the establishment of a colored department of the Kentucky School for the Blind. The legislature approved, and $20,000 was appropriated to buy land and erect a suitable building. In October 1884, the school was formally opened. Morrison Heady, the Blind Bard of Kentucky. Poet, novelist, musician, teacher, and inventor, James Morrison Heady was born in 1829 near Taylorsville, Kentucky. He lost the sight of one eye in an accident at age 6, and 10 years later another accident caused total blindness. He attended the Kentucky School for the Blind and later the Ohio School for the Blind. One of the nation's first solicitors and advocates for books for blind people, Morrison Heady traveled the country in the 1850s, raising funds for this purpose, and later was an agent for the American Printing House for the Blind. Heady was a gifted musician and taught piano until, at age 40, he became deaf. His first book, The Farmer Boy, published in 1863, was the story of George Washington's youth. It was published in Raised Letters by APH in 1874. Later, he wrote a historical novel and several books of poetry. His poems appeared in the Louisville Journal, where he was known as the Blind Bard of Kentucky. When Hitty's biography of Washington was embossed by the printing house in 1874, APH President W.F. Bullock wrote, "Written by a native of Kentucky, the foundations of whose education were laid in the Kentucky School for the Blind, and who, though totally blind and deaf, has in this work left a monument that will keep his memory evergreen in the hearts of the blind of our country." APH 6th Annual Report, 1874. Morris and Hedy's later years were spent in Louisville, where the city's most prominent citizens were his friends, and he was a well-known figure. At his death in 1915, he was eulogized by Rabbi Joseph Rauch, who said, "Mr. Hedy was a man with the vision of a seer, the spirit of a philosopher, and the soul of a poet." Tactile printing. Early printing presses were first run by hand and later by steam power, and presses were developed especially for embossing. To increase both speed and production, multiple printing plates, stereotypes, were made from the type. Frank Hall's 1893 invention of the stereotype maker revolutionized tactile printing. The stereotype maker, or stereotype machine, or stereotyper, or stereograph, mechanized hammering the dots into the metal plate and eliminated the need for making molds and casting the stereotypes. The first schools did their own printing on a limited basis, but the New England Institution for the Education of the Blind, under the direction of Samuel Gridley Howe, was the most active. Howe announced in 1836 that the institution had a beautiful and powerful press, invented and manufactured expressly for the purpose of printing for the blind. It was obtained at considerable expense after many experiments and trials with the common and power presses, and will soon give to the blind a better library than now exists. 2 years later, Howe wrote that his press had tripled the quantity of English language material in raised letters. The American Printing House for the Blind purchased its first press in the early 1860s, and it was later converted to steam power with the gift of a Baxter steam engine from the Colt Arms Manufacturing Company. Benjamin B. Huntoon became the superintendent of APH in 1872 and immediately put his mind to improving the process of printing in raised letters. Huntoon devised several methods of making stereotypes using readily available materials. When the invention of the stereotype maker ended the need for these other methods, APH was quick to embrace the new technology. The 1898 inventory of the composing room lists 6 stereographing machines and shafting and belting for operating same. Interpoint, two-sided embossing. Interpointing is embossing on the reverse side of the page so that the dots appear between the lines and also between the dots on the first page. It's hard to imagine why interpointing would be controversial, but it was. Even though technology made interpointing possible in the early 1900s, sighted teachers objected to its use in schoolbooks because it was harder to read by sight. The Matilda Ziegler magazine led the way in interpoint, printing two-sided pages on a rotary press in 1912. APH was ready to interpoint in 1922, but the ex officio trustees considered interpoint printing still to be in the experimental stages. Resistance to the new method continued, and in a 1928 letter, APH Superintendent Bramlett said that he ran upon a concentrated bunch of critics in regard to our new process of printing on both sides of a single plate. In 1931, APH received enthusiastic approval for their interpoint printing from educators who recommended that all non-technical books above fifth grade be done in interpoint. Printing tactile graphics. For blind students to understand the information in an illustration or diagram, it must be converted to tactile form. The first embossed illustrations were unreadable by blind people because they used the visual conventions of line, perspective, optical illusions of depth, color, and shading. A building drawn in perspective is meaningless to a person who has never seen. The APH Department of Educational and Technical Research, a leader in tactile graphics research, has conducted extensive studies to determine the most readable tactile symbols. The most recent APH advancement in tactile graphics is the use of puff ink, which can be applied as a liquid and becomes raised when it is dried by a heating process. Pencil writing. What if a visually impaired person wishes to write a letter to a sighted friend or needs to sign a legal document? Blind people sometimes need to write with a pen or pencil, and there are various guides to help them. When learning to write, the blind student is taught to follow the pencil point with the index finger of his left hand to help with letter spacing, dotting I's, and crossing T's. The American Printing House for the Blind was producing writing guides as early as 1875, when a report from APH trustees stated, "As for cheap writing guides, our printing house for the blind makes one of superior finish at 8 cents and an article inferior in finish at 4 cents." Tactile writing, the slate and stylus. Charles Barbier, who in 1808 introduced the dot system that was later modified by Louis Braille, also invented a frame for embossing his code. Braille simplified the writing frame to comply with his code, enabling blind people for the first time to read what they had written. The Braille slate, with its stylus which punches the dots, is basically the same today as it was when it was invented. Because the stylus punches the dots downward into depressions, the paper must be turned over to be read. This means that Braille is written from right to left. For finger readers, this is a readily acquired skill, although it may seem difficult to sighted people. Upward writing slates, which enabled the writer to emboss the Braille dots on the face of the paper, were not generally successful. Computer translation of Braille. In 1957, the American Printing House for the Blind began a joint research project with IBM to apply computer technology to the production of Braille books and periodicals. The computer system was fully operative by the fall of 1964. The new system eliminated the manual operation of stereotype machines. It was soon possible to reduce the translation of a 300-page book from 6 days of work by a skilled Braille translator to 1 hour by a key punch operator with no special training. Current Braille printing begins with the text being entered on a computer keyboard. The coded form of the words to be reproduced in Braille is stored on a diskette which drives the Braille output devices, TED and PED. The TED, text embossing device, produces interpoint Braille text on paper for proofreading copy, and sometimes final text. The PED, plate embossing device, punches Braille onto a double-folded metal plate used in a printing press. Federal assistance for visually impaired people. In 1876, Benjamin B. Huntoon of Kentucky led a committee of 6 superintendents who drew up a bill which would provide funding for embossed books and apparatus for blind children. It was presented to Congress by Albert S. Willis, representative from the 5th Congressional District of Kentucky. The bill became law March 3, 1879. The act set aside $250,000, the annual interest, about $10,000, from which was to be paid to the American Printing House for the Blind. It was to be used to print embossed books and furnish apparatus to all U.S. schools for the blind. The law directed the superintendents of the U.S. schools for the blind to be APH trustees ex officio, to act as agents of the government in governing the affairs of the institution. In 1906, Congress changed the act to a direct $10,000 appropriation to APH to be made annually in perpetuity. As the number of schools and populations of children increased, the appropriation has been increased. The original 1899 law, which allowed special mailing rates for blind people, has been expanded through the years. Currently, anyone unable to read conventionally printed material may use the free mailing privilege. In 1931, the Pratt-Smoot Act established a national free library service for adult blind readers, administered by the Library of Congress. Established to provide Braille books free to blind readers, it was expanded in 1934 to include talking books. In 1966, the program was extended to all persons who are unable to read conventional printed materials. Mechanical writing. Just as the typewriter replaced many uses of pens and pencils, the mechanical writing devices for tactile type were easier to use, faster, and more accurate than the slate and stylus. Through the years, there were many attempts to develop a mechanical writer, but it was the first commercial typewriter, manufactured by Remington in 1876, that provided the inspiration for the first workable model of a mechanical tactile typewriter. Frank Haven Hall, superintendent of the Illinois Institution for Education of the Blind, recognized his students' need for a faster, more efficient method of writing. Using the typewriter as a model, Hall began work on a Braille writer. Hall enlisted the help of Gustav Zieber, a gunsmith and skilled metal worker. A working model was produced, and a Chicago typewriter company produced the first five pilot models in May of 1892. By the next month, Hall had his students demonstrating the machines in a speed competition. The winner wrote 85 words a minute from memory and 31 from dictation. The production cost of the first 100 models was so low that Hall was able to offer them to blind people for $12. Hall was proud of the fact that no one involved with the development and production of the writer made a profit from the invention. Because he felt so strongly against making a personal profit, Hall did not seek a patent on his inventions. Mr. Sibley, superintendent of the Missouri School for the Blind, praised Hall's invention at a conference. To an educator of the blind, the Hall Braille writer is the greatest triumph of inventive genius working in behalf of the sightless, and is a lasting monument to the fidelity of the inventor to the cause in which he has so earnestly labored. A blind pupil can write a letter or other composition as rapidly as one with sight. Moreover, he can do work in arithmetic and algebra rapidly and accurately. Typewriting. The needs of a particular group, the visually handicapped, urged some inventors on to apply mechanical principles that ultimately were to be embodied in the typewriter, which in turn was to prove a special boon to the blind. Richard N. Current, The Typewriter and the Men Who Made It. From their earliest production, typewriters were promoted for use by blind people. An 1875 ad for the Scholes and Glidden writer declared, "This machine is a great boon to the blind. They can soon learn to write with it. The attention of the teachers of the blind is especially invited." As soon as they were available, typewriters were purchased by schools for the blind. In 1877, the Louisiana School for the Blind annual report noted the purchase of a typewriter. It was considered such an important acquisition that it was secured in a special room, and students needed special permission to use it. In 1876, Mr. Smead of the Ohio School for the Blind reported, "We are using in our institution three of the typewriters. The simple principle is, the types are operated by keys, as on the piano. The operation is simple, but the construction is complicated. Our girls use it most. Previously, pencil writing became so irksome to some pupils that they required seeing persons to write for them. Now they can go to the typewriter and write for themselves. A blind amanuensis, secretary, would be a practical thing with the typewriter." Fundraising. The idea for a national source for embossed books grew out of fundraising efforts in the mid-1800s. Dempsey Sherrod in Mississippi and Morrison Heady in Kentucky were blind men who traveled in their regions soliciting funds, first for having specific books printed in raised letters, and later for the establishment of a printing house for the blind. After the founding of the American Printing House for the Blind, soliciting and collecting agents were employed to raise funds for the institution. The names of donors and the amounts of their donations, which ranged from 25 cents to $50, were printed in the annual report. Hinton L. Hall of Philadelphia began working on behalf of the printing house as general and sole agent in 1871, continued working without remuneration until his death in 1905. In 1934, the need for an endowment fund for APH was recognized. Its purpose was to enable the Board of Trustees to provide books and apparatus to blind people who were unable to buy them. Trustee R.C. Ballard Thruston initiated the endowment fund with a gift of a $1,000 bond. By 1964, the endowment fund reached $1 million. Since the 1935 announcement of the first APH special project, providing the Braille edition of Reader's Digest free to blind readers, national direct mail fundraising campaigns have supported an increasing number of projects. In addition to direct mail, memorial contributions, foundation and corporate grants, bequests, and annuities also provide funds to help in the work of the printing house. Geography. The eye cannot help seeing much that it is not looking for, but the finger finds only what it actually touches. Charles W. Holmes, Director, Canadian National Institute for the Blind. People who are visually impaired use relief maps to study geography. These tactile maps are simplified and contain less information than printed maps for several reasons. First is the basic difference between receiving information with the eyes and with the fingertips. While the eye moves from the whole to the part, the finger can achieve the whole only through a synthesis of the parts. Second is the fact that some devices found in print have no counterpart in embossing. Colors, shading, etc., are difficult or impossible to duplicate in tactile form. Maps and globes in the 19th century. There were few relief maps available in the 19th century, and visually impaired children studied from maps made by their teachers. Maps were made with clay, papier-mâché, muslin, wood, or metal, cities being marked with nails and boundaries with string. Dr. Samuel Gridley Howe at Perkins produced Howe's Geography and several embossed paper atlases. APH produced an embossed atlas in 1894. In Kentucky, Bryce Patton began making wooden maps in 1870, and in 1874, Superintendent Huntoon was directed to purchase from H. McBride a Fleetwood scroll saw for the purpose of more expeditiously manufacturing maps for the blind. Access to the printed word. In the early 1900s, educators found that children who had partial sight could function in a regular public school classroom with proper room arrangement, good lighting, and large type books. These classes for visually impaired students were called sight-saving classes. In 1946, an act to promote the education of the blind was expanded to include large type books, and the APH Large Type Department was established, and production began when the plant facilities were expanded in 1947. In the mid-60s, photo-enlarging and offset printing techniques made large type printing commercially feasible. Today, many books and magazines are available in large type. Some visually impaired people use optical low-vision aids, such as various types of magnifiers, to read standard print. Electronic low-vision aids, known as CCTVs, closed-circuit television systems, are made up of a small television camera and display monitor. A number of attempts were made to create devices that would convert print to tactile form. The Opticon, 1971, was an electronic version of line-type finger reading, which transferred ink print images to vibrating pins so that the reader felt the shape of the letter on the finger pad. Sounds that reproduce human speech are infinitely more accessible than complex codes of musical notes or other sounds used in some early experiments. Synthetic speech gives a voice to computers and is used with an optical scanner in the speech output reading machine. The advantage to reading devices over Braille or large type is that they provide direct access to printed material. Direct access, however, is not always the primary consideration, and many visually impaired people choose Braille as the most efficient and satisfying reading medium. Reference books. Among the first reference books embossed for blind readers were Howe's General Atlas, circa 1836, and the Cyclopedia for Use of the Blind, compiled from various sources, begun 1845. Produced by Samuel G. Howe. 250 copies of a 3-volume embossed dictionary were printed in the mid-1870s at the Institution for the Blind at Philadelphia. Superintendent Chapin said that they saved as much space as possible by confining the definitions to almost the synonyms, omitting all words not really necessary. Mr. Chapin, AAIB Convention, Louisville, 1880. The Philadelphia Dictionary was praised by Otis Patton of the Arkansas School. We have 2 copies of that dictionary printed in Philadelphia, and it is in constant use by our pupils, while other books in the Philadelphia print are hardly ever read. The dictionary is considered indispensable. We have 1 copy for the girls and 1 for the boys, which are in constant use. In 1939, Webster's Students' Dictionary, a 32-volume Braille dictionary, was printed as a joint project of APH and the Braille Institute of America in Los Angeles. Braille experts at both organizations had to determine the Braille symbols for diacritical marks, the marks placed over letters to show how sounds are pronounced. The first voice-indexed dictionary was produced in 1984 by APH for the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped of the Library of Congress. The Concise Heritage Dictionary was recorded on 55 cassettes in the 4-track 15/16 inches per second format. Talking books. In his 1877 patent application for the phonograph, Thomas Edison listed phonograph books, which will speak to blind people without effort on their part, as a potential use for his invention. Since books for the blind offered no commercial promise, this application was not developed. A 1920s study showed that only a small number of blind adults could read Braille well enough to enjoy a book. In 1932, the American Foundation for the Blind began laboratory experiments to perfect a long-playing record which would reproduce a satisfactory quality of recorded reading matter at a cost which would make practicable the recording of books. It was decided that the speed would be 33 and a third RPM, since players for recordings at this speed would soon be available to the public. The first talking book produced was Coleridge's Rime of the Ancient Mariner. In a May 5, 1934 letter to A.C. Ellis, APH superintendent, J. Robert Atkinson, vice president, Braille Institute of America, wrote, "Less than 10 minutes ago, I turned off my radio, returned home from taking in the Kentucky Derby. What a wonderful age in which we now live. Radio, abundance of literature in Braille, as compared with the past, and now, shall I add to it, talking books." In February 1936, APH installed a model sound recording studio, and within a few months was equipped to manufacture talking book records from wax recordings to the finished pressings. The first talking book APH produced was Gulliver's Travels, narrated by Hugh Sutton, and recorded in 1938. The Books for the Adult Blind Project of the Library of Congress contracted with both AFB and APH for talking books, making an effort to divide the work between the two organizations to keep the prices competitive. Today, talking books and magazines are recorded on 4-track cassette tapes at half the speed of a commercial cassette, 15/16 IPS. The cassettes and playback equipment are available to people who can't read printed materials. To be eligible for talking book service, an applicant must submit professional certification that he or she is unable to read ordinary print or handle books. Magazines. One of the earliest U.S. magazines specifically for blind people was published beginning in 1867 by Napoleon B. Kneese, Jr. Kneese's Philadelphia Magazine carried articles of general interest. The Matilda Ziegler Magazine for the Blind began in 1907 and was embossed in Braille, New York Point, and Moon type. It is still being published. Reader's Digest was the first national print magazine to be offered in Braille. The Braille edition was introduced in 1928 by the American Printing House for the Blind. Today it is available both in Braille and on tape. The first weekly news magazine recorded for blind readers was Newsweek, which APH began recording in 1959 and continues to produce and distribute each week. You may listen to excerpts from early recordings of Newsweek and Reader's Digest at the next audio station on your left. Mathematics. Until mid-20th century, traditional teaching methods prevailed in the education of both sighted and blind children. Arithmetic was taught by rote. The earliest math aids were common objects. Using pins in different positions, a blind person could calculate on a pin cushion or his or her clothing. The most convenient counting tools were one's own 10 fingers, the basis of the abacus and the decimal system, both of which use the powers of 10. The first apparatus for tactile arithmetic was invented by a blind man, Nicholas Saunderson, in 1720. Soon there were variations and improvements on Saunderson's invention, pentagonal slates, octagonal slates, and the Braille cube slates in use today. These systems attempt to provide a way for blind students to set down arithmetic problems in the same pattern as they are written with pencil on paper. Arithmetic problems may be written in Braille with a slate and stylus, or a Braille writer. The Braille Mathematical Notation System, the Nemeth Code, was developed by Abraham Nemeth, a blind instructor of mathematics at the University of Detroit. A great many people throughout the world use the abacus to solve arithmetic problems, and it is especially helpful to blind people. The modern abacus is a frame having movable beads, counters, on parallel rods. Each rod with its counters represents one place in the decimal system. Science. Most science teachers used natural specimens for student observation. They collected and mounted minerals, animals, bones, plants, etc. for classroom use. An object that was very large or otherwise untouchable was constructed as a model, either by the teacher or as a class project. In his 1873 request for tangible science aids, B.B. Huntoon of the Kentucky Institution for the Blind wrote, "These models would be of incalculable benefit to the schools and would give the pupils ideas of the great truths of creation that would be far more complete and real than any obtained from mere description." Several factors must be understood about learning by touch. Fingers do not reveal perspective in two-dimensional diagrams or pictures, and fingers examine an object piecemeal, so it takes longer to understand the whole. A science teacher explained, "We must realize that the degree of pupil comprehension is directly proportional to the contact experience with the subject studied. The experience may be direct or indirect, and vary in intensity, but it must be present. Most of the public school experience is visual. Ours must be tactual and auditory." Music. As music is practically the only fine art which the blind can study successfully, it is emphasized far more in schools for the blind than elsewhere. It is doubtless true that the ears of the blind are developed to a greater keenness than those of the sighted, but this does not necessarily imply a keener ear for music. Merle Frampton, Education of the Blind, 1940. Even though early educators in schools for the blind knew that the long-held popular belief that somehow all blind people were gifted musicians was untrue, they strongly supported musical training. For those who proved to be talented, it offered vocational opportunities and, for the average student, personal satisfaction. Musical instruction was given orally, and teachers dictated the notes to be played to students learning to play instruments. There was embossed sheet music, but it was not until music was reproduced in the dot systems of Braille and New York Point that students could read and study music independently. Games and sports. Most games need some adaptations to be played by people who are blind. For example, wire guidelines for running and bells inside footballs and baseballs. Board games are adapted with pegs and holes so that pieces stay in place. Game pieces and playing cards are marked with raised dots or symbols or shaped in different ways. The first American schools for blind children. The humanitarian movement in the 18th century promoted the idea that blind people should be protected and educated. These new attitudes were most prominent in France, where the first school for the blind was founded in Paris in 1785. American civic leaders and philanthropists, who were familiar with the European schools, founded the first three schools for the blind in the United States. These schools, in New York, 1832, Boston, 1832, and Philadelphia, 1833, were privately financed residential schools. The movement to establish schools to educate blind children was taken up by the states, and by 1880 there were 29 state-supported schools. All of the early schools were residential schools, until the early 1900s, when day classes for visually impaired children were established in public schools, residential schools were the only educational resources for these children. The New York Institution for the Blind in New York City, now the New York Institute for Special Education, was incorporated in 1831 and opened in March 1832. The New England Asylum for the Blind was established in Boston in 1829 and opened, with six students, in July 1832. In 1839, the institution was renamed the Perkins Institution and Massachusetts Asylum for the Blind to honor Thomas Handaside Perkins, who gave his house and grounds to the school. It is now called the Perkins School for the Blind. The third U.S. school for the blind was the Pennsylvania Institution for the Instruction of the Blind, which was founded in 1832 and opened in March 1833. The Pennsylvania Institution was renamed the Overbrook School for the Blind in 1946. The first state-supported school for the blind was founded in Ohio in 1837, followed by Virginia in 1839 and Kentucky in 1842. By 1875, 30 public and private schools for blind children had been established in the country. Helen Keller. Helen Keller, 1880 to 1968, lost both her sight and hearing when she was very young. The story of how her teacher, Ann Sullivan, taught Helen to communicate using the manual alphabet is well known. She later learned to speak and graduated from Radcliffe College with honors in 1904. Helen Keller spent her life writing, lecturing, and working on behalf of the blind and deafblind people. Helen's favorite scripture passages found in her volume of the Book of Psalms are worn from years of frequent reading. This volume of the Bible, which belonged to Helen Keller, was printed by the American Printing House for the Blind.